I'm Tony Vinciguerra, Senior Manager of Technical Writing at athenahealth. athenahealth is a SaaS company, software as a service. It provides billing, medical record, and network services for doctors' offices and hospitals. So I'm here today to talk to you about one half of what I call the holy grail of technical documentation. Thank you for coming. So you're probably wondering, that little description in the app is probably not satisfying your curiosity too much. You're probably wondering, what the heck is this holy grail thing? So let me tell you a quick story about how this all came about. So a little more than a year and a half ago, I went on this little journey where I wanted to try to find a way to quantify good documentation. You know, as technical writers, we all have ways of qualifying good documentation. It's grammatically correct. It's, you know, correct instructions and so on and so forth, answers people's questions, right? I was wondering if we could quantify that. Could we put a number around it? So I called a dozen doc managers around the country, people through my network, and I said, hey, are you measuring readership of your online help? Are you measuring readership of your release documentation? And then, are you doing anything with that data? And some of them said, yeah, we are measuring readership. And I said, are you comparing the readership data of your online help to calls to your customer support department? And are you comparing readership of your release documentation to usage of the features that are featured in that documentation? And they all said no. And, you know, I told them, I want to prove that my documentation is having some impact in a quantifiable way. It's driving down calls to customer support. It's encouraging people to use the features that we're releasing. And the 12th doc manager I talked to, he said, that's the holy grail. If you could do that, that's like finding the holy grail. So I've been searching for it ever since. Whoa. You hearing me now? We good? Wow. As I move around, the sound is really moving. Sorry, I pace a lot when I talk. You'll have to forgive me. Are you guys messing with the audio over there? Okay, so it's not just me. You're screwing with my mind, man. All right. How are we doing now? We're good? We're good. You can hear me. Okay, good. All right. So as this slide alludes, there are two halves to it, right? So today I'm going to talk about that first half on the left there. So in the customer support world, they call this case deflection or call deflection. That means, of course, preventing people from calling your customer support department and costing your company money, right? That's what I'll talk about today. It's the easier of the two halves. It's by no means easy at all, but it's worth doing. And then tomorrow, I have a case study on feature adoption, as the marketing department likes to call it at Athena. So that's people actually using the features that we write about in our release documentation. Okay, so since today I'm going to be talking about online help, I figure I'd give you the lay of the land. I've worked at Athena for 10 years. I've got a couple of my other athenahealth employees over here in front of me. Just so you know where we're coming from when we're talking about our online help, this is what it looks like. So at Athena, we have roughly 8,000 clients. There are about 300,000 users across those 8,000 clients. There's just one version of our software. So it's that single-instance multi-tenant software you hear salespeople talking about all the time. We have roughly 2,200 help topics, and we publish directly into the code base. That's going to be very important as I go through this talk. So that means that our users have to log into our software in order to access our online help. It's not up on our public website like it might be in a lot of other cases. We have 3 full-time help authors as part of our 14-person tech writing team. As I go through this, I'm hoping that you'll agree with all of these points. You might be thinking, I have a full-time job. I'm a very busy person. Maybe you're like me. You're managing a tech writing team, right? How are you going to find time to do all this, and is it even worth doing? I would argue it's very worth doing. It might even save your job. So you're going to, first of all, find opportunities to improve your documentation, without a doubt. You might be able to define good documentation objectively. That, of course, is my goal. And I've gotten there. You can prove your documentation's value, and I mean literally with a dollar sign next to it. And I will show you the math behind that. If you do that, of course, you're going to garner some great recognition for your team, and it's going to help you with staffing needs when you go to talk to those folks holding the purse strings. It might boost your career. It hasn't done that for me yet, but there's still time. And like I said, show your team's value or ROI. Why would you want to even go there? So for those unfamiliar, ROI means return on investment. Essentially, in this case, what it means is your team of technical writers, are they costing your company money or are they saving your company money? And, you know, I can show you how you can prove that your company, your team is actually saving your company money. So tech writers never had to worry about this before. You know, I've been doing this for about 20 years. And back in the day, it seemed like only sales teams ever had to worry about their return on investment for their company. But now I'm seeing budgets get tighter, and I'm seeing that other teams, you know, in the companies that I work with and have worked for, have to prove their value to the company or they get cut. So the Holy Grail can help you show that, and that's why I think you should all be in search of it. So there are many different paths to the Holy Grail. A lot of things are going to affect that, and I'll get into some of those. But at a high level, here's what a path to finding it might look like. First of all, you have to measure readership. You can't do this without measuring readership. That almost goes without saying, right? Then you're going to have to gather data on calls to your customer support department. And you want to continue to measure over time, because if you're looking at just one point in time, that's probably not very valuable to those folks holding the purse strings. But if you can show trends over time, you know, now you're cooking with gas. You know, now you can really show some impact. And then if you can get down to user-specific data, which is the really hard part, that is going to be even more compelling. And if you can show a correlation there, that's going to be really strong messaging to your management. And then if you're really lucky, you'll be able to show causation. Now, for logistical reasons, business reasons, legal reasons, that can be hard. But coming shy of causation, still very valuable. You'll be shocked at how valuable correlation can be. Now, I've been on this path for more than a year, like I said, almost a year and a half now. And I learned three big lessons along the way I thought I'd pass along to you. One is, you know, you're going to have to be open-minded. When I first started out, I had a big head, and I thought, I know what I need to do. I just need to do it. Just leave me alone and let me do what I need to do. And I just wasn't really listening to anybody else. But other people were coming to me with ideas, and I quickly learned that I was hitting a lot of dead ends. I got a bunch of call data from customer support, and I had no idea how to interpret it. It was just a vast pool of data that it was just, I was useless. You know, so I really needed to be open-minded. I really needed to listen to other folks that could offer me some ideas. You're going to need to be tenacious. Like I said, I hit dead ends. You're probably going to hit a lot of dead ends. So tenacity is going to be important. Now, this last word is probably the scariest word I could use in a room full of technical writers. But you are going to have to make some friends. I am introverted, too, and it's not easy. But you cannot do this alone. Boy, did I learn that in spades. And I'll explain some of that. All right, there is no one-size-fits-all for this Holy Grail thing, right? Because we all work in very different industries, very different products, very different types of documentation. So the size of your organization is going to play into this. Athena Health is a really large company, 5,500 employees. So we have a lot of resources to put behind tools and staffing, which is great. However, it also means a lot more bureaucracy in trying to make those friends I was talking about. You're going to have to make friends in customer support, of course, and then you're going to need friends in IT and people that can help you connect trackers to your documentation and on and on. That's harder to do in a bigger company, but it very, you know, a lot easier in a smaller company typically. But of course, smaller companies are going to have less money to spend on staffing and tools and things like that. All right, how many people have seen this graphic before? Can I see a show of hands? Look at like two people. Wow. Three? All right. I first saw this graphic in a book called The Lean Startup. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. It's about It's about, you know, agile way of delivering functionality to your clients. And I think it's pretty clear. I love this graphic because it's just so clear. And talk about a picture says 1,000 words, right? There you have it. I mean, instead of spending a year and a half trying to build a sports car, which I did try to do, by the way, and failed miserably, and delivering nothing along the way, you should instead deliver some kind of value, even if it's just a skateboard, right? Even if that's still going to help people get from point A to point B. It's a skateboard. It sucks, but it's no sports car, but it's a hell of a lot better than a wheel that has nothing attached to it. You add handlebars to that, you've got yourself a scooter, you add some gears, you get a bike, you add a motor, you get a motorcycle, you get the idea. So I eventually embraced this after having read the book, The Lean Startup. I thought, this is actually a good metaphor for what I'm trying to do. So this is, like I said, there are many paths to the Holy Grail. This is similar to what my path looked like, so I'm going to walk you through this. For a skateboard, what's great about this is you don't even have to track readership. All you need to track is the date that you made a change to a piece of documentation, a significant change, so that you can see if there's any correlation in calls to customer support before and after you made that change. So if there's one thing you take away from this presentation, let it be that. Keep track of the date you make a significant change to your documentation, because you're gonna need that. All right, to build your scooter, now you're gonna have to track some more data. You're gonna replicate your skateboard, essentially, right? So if you can do the skateboard for one help topic, and you have some success with that, you can just replicate that with eventually all of your help topics, and that's what your scooter would look like. Changing gears to the bicycle, pun intended. Sorry, that was a bad one. This is where you're gonna try to find user-level specific data. Did user Jane Doe look at my online help, and then did she call customer support or not? That's the kind of thing you wanna look for there. So if you can do that with just one topic, you'll be impressed at how powerful that can be. And that'll give you something to replicate to build your motorcycle. So the motorcycle is just the bicycle, except across, hopefully, all of your help topics, if you can do it. Now, up to this point, you're, like me, probably manually pulling data on customer support calls and on readership of your online help. The sports car would be if you can automate some of that. If you can get some of this stuff automatically fed into a dashboard, this is where you need your IT nerd friends to help you out. I haven't gotten there yet, by the way, but I have gotten some good stuff that I will share with you, I promise. All right, so what would a skateboard look like? It would look like this, right? So you make a significant change to your online help. Maybe you got some feedback from customer support saying that they were getting a lot of calls about something. You keep track of that date. Then you ask them for the call data for, let's say, 30 days before you made that change, and then 30 days after you made that change. And then compare the two. Is there any correlation there? You know, you're not proving anything, but you're just seeing if there's any correlation. This is what it might look like. You know, the blue bar being calls before you made your change, the green bar afterwards. So I just walked you through this. You asked support for a call driver. What's a call driver? Just something they're getting a lot of calls about, right? So at AthenaHealth, like I said, we do a lot of billing in the medical space. So we get a lot of calls, for example, from doctor's offices saying, tried to submit this claim to an insurance company to get reimbursed, and it keeps getting kicked back to me, what's going on there? So we write online help that helps them figure out how to do that. And customer service gets a lot of calls about it. So that's a call driver. So when I say call driver, that's the kind of thing I mean. So again, you gather cases for a month. You identify the associated help topic to that call driver. You make edits to it. You track that date. That's the key part. And then you look at the next month and see if there's any correlation. If you can pull that off, you can replicate it across a bunch of your help topics. So here we add in 8 more help topics, and we track them all before and after we made the change. So with a bicycle, in this case, now you're tracking specific readership. You're not just looking at call data. Now you need to track readership of your online help. So you need to track something that can actually show you the user data. I'll get into some examples of this later. User Jane Doe, did she look at your online help? You know, then, again, you want to look at some specific call driver. Did she look at the help topic that deals with that call driver? And then you want to see, did she call customer support after you made changes to that help topic? You track the readership, and you see if there's any correlation there. Did she call or did she not call? And you want, of course, do this across your whole user base if you can pull it off. I'll show you some examples of what I've done in this area that might explain this a little better. All right, this is what it might look like. That 166 number, I know this is like a bus schedule. Don't sweat it. I'll explain it in great detail when I get to my examples. But essentially, that 166 number is your holy grail. Those are the people that read your online help and did not call customer support. And specific users, like you have their username, for example. I promise I will explain that graphic. All right. Motorcycle is just the bicycle, except now you're doing it across multiple topics instead of just one help topic, one call driver. And you're not just doing it at one point in time. You're not just doing it for the month of September. You're doing it for September, October, November, December. You're showing across time, you know, how much correlation is there between people reading your online help and calling customer support. Again, I will explain that graphic too, I promise. All right, sports car, like I said, this is now you're automating some of this stuff. Now you're getting, you know, if you could find some correlating factors. Remember earlier I said I got all this call data and I didn't know what the heck to do with it. I was useless with this. It was just a vast pool of nothingness to me. Well, people that know what they're doing, mostly people that work in customer support, they can help you actually figure out key phrases that you can use to correlate that. And you get some friends in IT, they can help you program those correlating phrases, and then you can start feeding this data into a dashboard instead of you going and manually pulling it. So that's my 2019 goal. I haven't gotten there yet. And the nerds tell me that I need to use something called Snowflake, which is something called a data lake, which don't ask me now. All right. I mentioned advertising help topics. You might have noticed in some of those past few slides. I'm like, you know, you make a change to your help topic or maybe you advertise it. What did I mean by that? Putting up a billboard on the highway? No. So these are some ways that we advertise our help at Athena Health. So on the right there is a screen capture from our community site that our customers can log into, and you can see we're advertising a bunch of our online, we call our online help OHelp for short, by the way. Don't ask me why, it predates me. You could also link to it from your release documentation. Almost all our release docs have a link to the online help. You can mention it in your client newsletter. Being in healthcare, our client newsletter is called The Dose. Isn't that cute? In The Dose, we often feature an online help topic of the month or whatever. Then, of course, in our training, so we have a separate training department that's separate from the tech writers, and they also link to our online help in there as well, which is great. All right, let's talk about some tools. So I just used the tools that were laying around my kitchen. In this case, Google Analytics was already being used at Athena Health by a couple of other teams, so I went to one of those teams, and I said, hey, I want to track readership of my online help. Can you help me out? And they said, sure. Super easy to set up. They just give me a little code snippet. Those of you that have used it, you probably know what I'm talking about. Stick it in your master page and your HTML5 output, and you are in business tracking anonymous data. You're not going to get, at least with the free version of Google Analytics, you're not going to get user-specific data. Certainly not in our instance where we're dealing with the healthcare industry. Our legal department's not too keen on us tracking that stuff with this kind of a tool. So the good news is, like I said, this is a free version. And the nice part is you can see what search terms people are entering into the Flare HTML5 output. And it stores data indefinitely. There's no limit there, which is great. The bad news is it doesn't give you the search terms that yield no results, which I really like a lot. And I've found in some other tools I used to use. This being the Madcap conference, I would be remiss if I did not mention this tool, of course. Unfortunately, I've never used it. How many people here use Pulse? Anybody? Anybody? No? Wow. Okay, good. So I won't feel so bad. I was feeling really guilty that I hadn't tried this out. Well, they tell me, and I read online on the Madcap website, that it's a lot like Google Analytics, except it does show you the searches that yield no results, which I thought was really cool. I'm not sure about the cons because I read it off their website, and they're not going to talk about those, right? All right, so to get user-specific data, this was one of the big dead ends I hit when I was talking about my tenacity earlier. This was a solution to that. So Elasticsearch, you guys, most of you are probably familiar with Elasticsearch, but if you're not, don't be embarrassed. I wasn't. It's a search tool. It has search right in the name, right? It's like Google, except it's for your company specifically, right? It's hosted on-premise typically, or you can use a cloud version. But it's a search tool. So, and I knew that AthenaHealth was using it, and I was looking for an analytics tool, and I went to a bunch of people and I said, I need an analytics tool. And they said, oh, you could just use Elasticsearch. And I said, that's like using a hammer when I need a screwdriver. I'm like, what are you talking about? But actually, it's indexing all this data. Remember I said earlier that our online help is embedded in our code base, that our clients have to log in order to access our online help. Well, guess what? Elasticsearch, this search tool, it's indexing every click that's happening in our software, including clicks on our online help. And it's capturing the usernames of those users that are doing it. And it's sticking them all in this big index. So I can peek into that index with this free open source software called Kibana. And I could get the usernames of these people. So that was really cool. So it's great for the Flare HTML5 output that we have embedded in our software. And it gets me the individual user data that I need. Unfortunately, because it's creating these vast pools of data, most companies, and Athena's no exception, have some sort of delete date. And so at Athena, it's 4 months. So anything that happened more than 4 months from today is gone forever. I have no access to it unless I go and capture it prior to that date. They're also, like I said, we have 2,200 help topics in our HTML5 output. If I try to do a search and pull data on all 2,200 topics over more than 10 or 11 days, it just craps out. It can't deal with it. It's just way too much data. So there are some limitations. Like I said, hammer when I needed a screwdriver, but it got me my skateboard. All right. For an analytics tool, again, use the tools lying around my kitchen. Tableau was already being used at AthenaHealth. I needed something that where I could plug in all this data, something a little more robust than Microsoft Excel. And we were already using Tableau, so I took a 2-day course on how to use it, so I learned some basic stuff. It does have a steep learning curve, like the slide says. It's not like Microsoft Excel by any stretch. But the nice thing about Tableau is I can take data from Salesforce that our customer service department sends me, and I can take data that I've pulled through Elasticsearch, and I can take data from Google Analytics, and I can just throw it all in there, and it'll compare it all like it's apples to apples. It's very impressive. And it can create some pretty cool dashboards. But it is expensive. And I'll get to that as well right here. $840 for a year license per person. Being a full-time doc manager, as I am, I did not have a lot of time for this. But my manager really liked some of the preliminary results I was bringing to him. So he gave me the okay to hire a contractor. So I had a contractor. He works for me for about 20 hours a week. So if you're going to do this, figure out the hourly rate in your area. For that, he did some awesome research on tools. He gathered a bunch of data, crunched numbers. He built a lot of the dashboards I'm going to show you in this presentation. To say I couldn't have done this without him is an understatement. His name is Daniel, by the way. I'll mention him off and on. Google Analytics, like I said, we're using the free version. Elasticsearch, big investment for your company, anywhere from $12,000 a year just for the software. And then they have to have hardware and servers and databases and all that stuff for it to sit on and work with. So you're going to have to ask your IT department about that. Kibana, like I said, open source, freeware, and works fine for what it is. All right, so at this point, you're probably thinking, does this guy even know what the hell he's talking about? Because I've just been talking about a lot of theory and whatnot, right? So yes, I will finally shut up and show you some stuff, I promise. So I'll show you what I've accomplished. And like I said, you can't do it alone. And I'm going to mention a few names along the way as I go through my example, so I just want you to know who I'm talking about so I don't confuse you, or confuse myself more likely. So like I said, we have three full-time help authors. One of them is sitting here in the front row. I won't say her name. Then you're going to need, of course, connections with customer support. So I worked a lot with Patty and David in particular, so I'll mention their names, but they're in their customer support department. Tools expert to help you connect Google Analytics to your HTML5 output, that kind of stuff. People that can show you how to use tools like Kibana, Tableau, Elasticsearch. So Jack was that guy. My Italian friend, Pier Paolo, he served two key roles in this whole project for me. One is he's the Tableau administrator at Athena Health, so he helped me learn how to use that tool and get set up with it. More importantly, he's a mathematician. And I am not at all. I'm the opposite of a mathematician, whatever that would be. And so Pier Paolo actually helped me figure out a lot of the math I needed to do. So I'm going to mention him a lot. Daniel is the contractor I mentioned earlier. And Fran is the newest member of our tech writing team. She's been helping me crunch a lot of numbers as well. All right. So I told you, number one thing I want you to take away from this presentation is to keep track of the date you make a significant change to a help topic. The second thing, know a good thing when you see it. Now that you've heard some of this stuff, keep your ear to the ground and know when you see a good opportunity. So that happened to me last summer. Someone went to our help author in the front row here and said, hey, can I get some readership data on these help topics? And so, of course, she came to me and asked if I could do that. So I just pulled the data from Google Analytics. It took me, I don't know, an hour less, probably half an hour. And being the nice guy that I am, I got the data off right away to our Patty in our customer support department. And I said, hey, since I just got you that data, could you get me the data on the calls that correlate with these help topics? And she said, sure, yeah, I'll ask David to do that. So David, who you saw on the previous slide, much to my surprise, spent 10 hours, I don't know where he found the time, 10 hours to figure out which case types that were calls to customer support that correlated with our help topics. So on the right are the titles of our help topics. In the middle are the cases that customer support opens up when they get a phone call. And then he went the extra mile, and he created that left-hand column where he figured out how easily he could report on this out of the Salesforce CRM system that they use to track all the calls, right? And he's like, oh, you know, the high correlated ones, those are the ones where I feel like every time I look through all the Salesforce cases that we create when we get calls, very easy to correlate them all together and bucket them and say, yeah, these are all about claim appeals. You know, and then the number three down at the bottom, the moderate ones, he's like, yeah, a little harder to create the correlation there. I'm not certain that all these calls are necessarily exactly about this. So that's what that stands for. I haven't used that yet, but I think it will come in handy. All right, I kept talking about modifications to help. Maybe I figured I'd show you a quick example of one that we did. So this screenshot is from an HTML5 Flare output. It's a big, long help topic. It's pages long. And customer support told our help authors here, said, hey, you know, we're getting a lot of calls about patients with credit balances. Could you just include a little bit of data in there, you know, a little info in here? So that's all. So it's everything in that red box is all we added. It was just the two steps, a little bit of introductory text, and that was it. And so that's an example of a modification. So we tracked the date that we made that change, and then we looked at the data 60 days before, 60 days after, and we saw a significant drop in calls, actually. So this is our skateboard. Like I said, for your skateboard, you don't even need to track readership. It's like that modification I just showed you. We just track the date that happened. So I think there's only like 9 here, right? But we actually looked at about, I think it was about 13 to start. But I wanted to make it at least somewhat legible at the back of the room. So we looked at the call data 60 days before we made an edit to a help topic. And again, it's calls that relate, that correlate back to this slide here, right? The ones that correlate closely. So claim appeals correlates closely with that Athena Health claim appeal on your behalf topic, right? So we're looking at claim appeal calls after we made edits to that topic. So claim appeal calls 60 days before we made the edit, 60 days after we made the edit, did the numbers go up or down? You know, not scientific at all. But is there any correlation there? And so that's what we looked at. And you can see in most cases, so the blue bar is calls before and the green bar is calls after. And you see in most cases they did go down. In one case went up. And now we have that insight. Now we can look into why they went up. So I did. I actually went back to David. I said, hey, why do you think calls went up on that one topic? That's, you can't read that, I know, on the back of the room, but it says Blue Cross Blue Shield, something or other. And he said, there was a release of a new feature that affected, you know, that type of thing. So there you have it. All right, for our scooter, we looked at the whole year. Instead of just 60 days before, 60 days after, we said, let's look at the whole year worth of call data. And by the way, let's also look at readership data, just aggregate anonymous data. So this was done with Google Analytics. And then let's keep track of the date that we made the change. So let me explain what you're looking at here. So the black bar, that vertical bar, that's the date we made the change, and that correlates with the month of May. I'm sure you can't read those months in the back of the room. I apologize for that. But that just says January through December at the bottom. That's all it says. And so the blue bar are the calls to customer support that they got on this particular topic. And then the orange bar are how many views, how many page views, unique customer page views, that we got to the help topic that correlates with those calls to customer service. And as you can see, this worked out exactly as we had hoped it would to start, which is when we made the edit in May, suddenly there was a decrease in calls, there was a nice increased spike in readership of that topic. So that was cool. But then notice, it all goes to hell in November. And it reverses the trend. A lot less people reading it and a lot more calls to customer service. Well, guess what? We had a big release in November. And so that'll do it. So now we have that insight. Okay, I mentioned earlier my Italian friend, Pier Paolo, the mathematician. So I went to him and I said, hey, I want to build my bicycle. I want to look at individual user data. I want to know, did user Jane Doe read this online help topic? And then did she call customer support about that help topic? And I can get that data now. I know how to do that. What I don't know how to do is what to do with that data once I have it. I'm not a mathematician. So this is literally a photo I took of what he drew on the whiteboard. So that's all. You don't need an explanation for that, right? That's pretty clear. I was dumbfounded. I said, what language is that? So I took a bunch of data. So I looked at one help topic, and I looked at, you know, one type of call to customer support. I brought in all the numbers. He drew this on the whiteboard, and I said, okay, you're going to have to give me more than that. I don't know what that means. So that's the graphic I showed you earlier. So this is what happened when we put it into Tableau to help crunch the numbers, right? So this is going to be hard to interpret as well because I know it looks like a bus schedule. So I have another graphic in the next slide that'll maybe explain it a little better. But again, essentially, it's just true or false. Did this user read the online help, right? And then of all the ones that read the online help, did they open a case with customer support on that topic? This was for the month of September, so we were looking at this 30-day window. Within that 30-day window, who read the online help and who opened a case with customer support on that topic? In this case, the topic's called payer side issues. Don't worry about what that means. I don't even know. All right. So again, that 166 number, that's your holy grail. Those are those folks that read your online help and never called customer support in the month of September. You just want to divide that by all the people that read your online help. That's the 456 number in the bottom center there. And there's the math at the top, 36%. So in theory, you technically deflected, as they call it in the customer support industry, deflected 36% of the calls to customer support, right? It's correlation, not causation, not scientific at all, but it's something. Here, this might make it a little easier to digest. On the right, in the blue circle, that's your readership numbers, right? So at the top, you have the 456 total people that read that online help topic in September of 2018 in this case. 166 of those read the help and did not open the case. That's the holy grail you're looking for. On the left, you've got all the people that opened a case in the red. And then you've got the folks that didn't read the help and opened a case. And then the folks that did read the help, that 290 in the middle, those are the people you never answered their question because they read the help and they still opened a case, customer support. So again, the math is at the very bottom of the slide here where, again, you're dividing your holy grail number, the 166, people that read the help, did not open a case, by all the people that read the help, 456, you get 36%. Not as high a number as you would like, right? But now you have that insight. All right, so now, once we figured that out, once Pier Paolo explained all that crazy math to me and distilled it down to just one easy division, we could replicate this. So we did it for 9 more help topics. And instead of just for the month of September, we did it for October, November, December. So I spent January doing a bunch of math. And, you know, and here you get your averages across those months. So across all 10 help topics, across all 4 months, the bottom right number is the number you're looking for. That's that 86%. So in theory, we're deflecting 86% of calls to customer support by people reading these help topics. So again, correlation, not causation. People aren't sitting in a Skinner box with our documentation in front of them and a phone to customer support in a locked room with no access to anything else, right? They could turn and ask the person next to them, get an answer to their question that way. But it's correlation. It might not look like much to say correlation, but when I brought this to my manager, he immediately brought me into the office of his manager and told me to show him this. And they said, we're taking away one of your direct reports, and we want you to send delegates to the rest of your meetings that you can. We want you to focus as much on this as you can. This is fantastic. They were very excited. All right. I also had timestamps in Kibana, right? So that tool that I use to look into the Elasticsearch index, it also pulls the timestamp of when someone does a click as well, right? So it looks at when someone clicked on my online help. I've got the timestamp. And of course, we have timestamps from customer service of when they got the phone call. So I thought, instead of just saying, within that 30-day window of September, when did someone call customer support about topic X, and then did they also read online help for topic X? Let's look at the timestamps. Let's see if one happened before the other. So here, we were looking at the reverse. So here, a lower percentage is better, because I'm looking here for the people whose questions I didn't answer. Who are the people that read the online help, and then after they read the online help, called customer support about that topic anyway? And so you want a really low percentage with that, right? Hopefully you're answering more people's questions than not. So again, we ran the same type of math here across all 10 help topics, across all 4 months, and we came down with a nice low 8% in the bottom right corner. Again, my manager's manager was very excited. Okay, I told you earlier I haven't built my sports car yet, but I'm hoping to do that this year. Well, at least start it this year. We'll see how we get. Anyway, I want to start tracking some of this stuff. I'm still pulling all my data manually is the punchline. I'm hoping to automate some of that stuff. That 10 hours of work that David and customer support put in for me just for those 10 help topics and those 10 case types, I want to try to automate some of that work. If he can help me capture some of those key phrases and we can program some of that in so we can feed this data into a dashboard, that would be ideal. So I showed you this slide at the beginning of the presentation. I'm hoping now that you've seen some of the stuff that I've done and some of the recommendations I'm giving you based on the mistakes I've made and the successes I've had, I'm hoping you'll agree with all of these points. Clearly, you can find opportunities to improve your documentation when you see those spikes that I was showing on some of those graphs, right? You'd be like, wait, something's wrong here, you know? And you can talk to your customer support department and say, why are you getting a lot of calls about this? What's going on? You can make changes. Thank you. What changes can you make? All that kind of thing. I just got a 10-minute warning. I want to leave time for questions, so I'm going to jump right to the punchline here. All right. So I told you I was going to help you put a dollar sign next to the value that your online help and your team brings to your company. Let's say my motorcycle is correct. Let's say we extrapolate those 10 help topics, which, of course, I am going to continue to extrapolate across all 2,200 help topics. And I'm going to continue adding. I've already started adding 2019 data to some of those dashboards I showed you. Let's say that 86% number remains constant throughout that. What if we are preventing 86% of readers of our online help from calling customer support? Well, I talked to leadership in the customer support department, the vice president there, and I said, do you have an estimated dollar amount for how much it costs our company every time a customer picks up the phone and calls customer support? And he said, yes, I do. And he gave me that number, and I put it in this slide deck, and legal told me to take it out. So I'm not allowed to share that number with you, but let me just say it's a two-digit number. So you do the math there. Two-digit number per call. And then I looked at the average number of unique client page views to our online help every single day. So that comes to just over 7,000. So if you multiply that by the 260 roughly working days in a year, that's 1.8 million unique client page views of our online help every year. If you multiply that by the 86% of calls to customer support that we're potentially deflecting, that's 1.5 million calls to customer support we're potentially not happening thanks to our online help. So if you multiply that by that mythical two-digit number I'm not allowed to tell you, tens of millions of dollars in annual savings to Athena Health, and I still haven't been promoted. Now, I'm making some assumptions here. I'm making two big assumptions, right? So the biggest assumption I'm making is that right, 7,000 plus unique page views, I'm assuming that every single page view to my online help is a potential call to customer support. Maybe it's not that. I want to work with my UX department and the research council that they have there, see if I can figure out what that number should be. Is it 4 page views? Is it every time someone views 4 of our online help topics, that's when they typically pick up the phone and call customer support? Or is it every single one? I don't know. Even if you divide that number by 4, which I did, you still come up with tens of millions of dollars in annual savings. So making some assumptions, but my boss put this exact math with the real numbers in my annual review. So that tells you something. All right, quick sales pitch, and then I'll get to questions. So tomorrow, 2:50, come see me talk about the other half of the Holy Grail. Like I said, gripping tale of failure, tenacity, learning, more failure, some success. It's fun. Okay, questions. Fire away.
So are you doing anything to differentiate the characteristics of the individual calls? Because sometimes people call because they couldn't find something, and sometimes people call because they found something and it's wrong.
Right.
And sometimes people call because they want to tell you that you have a typo.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. So I assume you folks in the back probably couldn't hear that question. The question was, correct me if I'm wrong, am I accounting for the different types of calls to customer support? Yeah, and short answer is no, other than all that work that my buddy David in customer support did for me, where he's correlating the calls. You know, he's, like I said, those number 5, the ones at the top there, were highly correlated, where he's like, this is strongly correlated to the content in this help topic and strongly correlated to each other as that they're about this particular topic. I don't think that, you know, we would be including anything like if there's a typo in that. First of all, our customers aren't calling customer support if there's a typo in the online help. But what was the other example you gave? If they just couldn't find something. Oh, right.
Stories about that.
Yeah. So you're saying even if something's documented, they're still getting calls to customer support about it because people just aren't seeing that.
Exactly.
Yeah, I haven't looked at that, but I did. It's funny, I did have a discussion with support about that. I thought, you know what, you should let me know when that's happening because that's when we make those modifications, right? One modification you can make is to pull that content out and stick it up at the top of the help topic or somehow recast it in a way or change the heading or whatever, but yeah, I mean, that's certainly, that's like a 2.0 type of thing. I like that thinking.
Well, one of the things that we did at the company where I was working on something very similar, they made a peer high performance evaluation that I had to drive down customer support calls.
Jesus.
So I managed to get support to agree to fill in a drop down and pick I think 7 items or 7 reasons support about that were related to documentation. And then support was then picking things, to let me know what it was that problem, what problem was occurring.
Right, those high call drivers I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, I mean, if I was missing a lot of information, I wanted to know that, but if I was putting the information in there and they couldn't find it, that drives a whole different solution.
Right. So for those that might not have heard, so he's saying you had a nice relationship with customer support, it sounded like, and a good communication, it sounds like at least. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't a happy relationship, small company, right? Right, so they would let you know if there was something, some content missing from the help, but the problem areas were when the content wasn't missing from the help and they were still getting a bunch of calls. And so how did you handle that?
Yeah. Depended. I mean, if
it was a case by case thing.
Yeah, I tried a lot of solutions. One of the most effective things I did to drive down support calls was I changed the color of the headings.
Huh.
It turns out that people start to read the help more if there's some kind of
visual. Wow. So there's the third thing you should take away from this session. Change the color of your headings in your online help. Drives down support calls.
Sure, Heisenberg principle.
Right.
Change the color of the headings, they think you're watching. So
very nice, great. Any other questions? Yes?
So I'm assuming that the return that you calculated was much larger than the cost of your documentation team?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, there are 14 of us, and if you combine all our salaries, it is not tens of millions of dollars. That is correct. Yes, we have a winner. So, right. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be sarcastic. Is that what you were looking for, or is that, or did you? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes. When you talk about tracking readership in your software, is everyone that uses your software, do they have a unique ID?
Yes. Oh, thank you for pointing that out. I meant to mention that. I forgot. That is in my talk track, and I forgot to bring it up. So he asked, the question was, is there a unique ID for the users reading the online help and using the software and calling customer support? The answer is yes, right. So they have to log into our software with a username. So it's cloud-based, right? So they're accessing it through a browser. So, right, they have to log in with a username and a password. So when I look into that Elasticsearch index data, I'm seeing that unique user ID that they use to log in. I'm using their login ID. And that same login ID is tracked by customer support when they call customer support as well. So that's my unique identifier between the two, between the support data and the readership data. In my case, it's the login ID, and that's what I get to use. That's what gives me the motorcycle, exactly right. Yeah, without that, I would be lost, right, if I can't.
Yeah, all right, because that means I probably can't get past the skateboard.
Oh, really? Because you don't? Is your help public-facing? Is that why? Or they just?
The people who would be looking at my help, even if we brought it internally, are going to have unique login IDs at their employer, not to us.
At the employer, but not, okay. The unique login IDs, he was saying, is not to access your help. At the employer level. So you can see organization to organization, but you
can't see.
Right. Well, I mean, that might be an interesting thing, though, is see, like, did anybody from this organization read this help topic, and then did anybody from the organization call customer support about it?
It's still worthwhile.
I don't know. Yeah,
I think it
is worthwhile, absolutely. Absolutely. You'll see in tomorrow's presentation, I actually talk a lot about organization to organization comparisons. So that's really interesting. Yeah, I know it's a challenge. Thanks for bringing that up. Yes, question? That's a good question. No, I haven't even considered that. I mean, we've always made the assumption that some people just would much rather call customer support, and we have anecdotal data. So the tech writers on our team, we go on a client site visit, and we try to send several people on a client site visit every year to learn some of this. And we do ask them, we're like, hey, do you read the online help? Do you read the release notes? That kind of stuff. And many people have said to us flat out, oh, I just love calling customer support. They're so friendly there. Yep.
Probably some generational
preferences. Well, right, there probably are. Yeah, yeah. But no, I haven't looked into that. That's a really good point. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, yeah, some people, I mean, right, tech writers, like we like to read stuff. And you know, and then other people are like, screw that, I'm picking up the phone. You know, just have somebody tell me how to do it. Yes, question. No. So the question, if anybody couldn't hear that, was do the metrics that I've shown here drive the work priorities of the online help authors? The answer is no, not yet. No, they haven't. Our help folks here, they have a really good relationship with customer support, and there's just a lot of good two-way communication there. Although it tends to be mostly one way, it's like customer support contacting you, right, and saying, hey, we're getting a lot of calls about this. Right, but so yeah, that and then we have, as you'll see in tomorrow's presentation, if any of you make it to that, we have really large releases, and that drives the majority of their work. It's just keeping the help up to date with all the stuff that we're releasing. But no, that's a really interesting point that I never thought about, that of using that to prioritize. Like I said, right now we've only done it for the 10 help topics, right? So I want to extrapolate. That's the other second assumption, by the way, in my math, is that those 10 help topics are representative of the 2,200 help topics in our help system, right? So, of course, I just added 10 more last week, and we're going to keep adding 10 more hopefully every month and get to eventually all 2,200. So that's the other assumption. We'll see if that works. So once we get to that point, maybe then we could start doing that kind of thing. That's a good question. Other questions? Yes. Hi. Sorry, I didn't see you there. Mm-hmm. Well, so you saw at the beginning, I was looking at anonymous data, right? So first of all, like I said, you don't even need to track readership to build my skateboard that I showed you, right? You're just looking at call data before and after, so you can do that. And then you can, with the anonymous data, that was my scooter, my second graph, which showed over the course of 2018, you know, what was the dates that I made. I calculated the date that I made a change, and then I looked at the call data and the readership data before and after that change over the course of the year. So you can do that. When you say, how do I change my approach, did what I just say answer what you were looking for, or do you mean technologically, like can I change it in such a way that I can more closely track readers?
Well, I can identify exact
readers. Right. Yep. Sure. Of course. So there are tools. There are tools out there. They are expensive, at least the ones I've looked at, because we did look into some of this before we found out that we could get the user level data through the Elasticsearch index. We talked to a bunch of companies. Remember, I said Daniel did a bunch of research for me on tools, and so we actually had some in person and on the phone conversations with some companies that. So basically what you're looking for is those SEO companies, those search engine optimization companies, right? And they can help you. They'll create a unique identifier for each session that will, you know, so you can track at least what that user is doing within that session. Now, the problem lies, of course, in tracking those people contacting support, right? And that I'm afraid I don't have an answer for you there. I don't know, but maybe some of these companies, if you spend enough money with them, will help you solve that problem. But I'm sorry, I don't have an answer for that.
One more question,
then we're out of time. Yes. Next question. Any? Yes. Yeah. Do we localize our content? The answer is no. 100% of our clients are in the United States, so everything is in American English. We have a tiny, yeah, I know. We are looking to add Spanish for some stuff later this year, so we might start to do that. But right now we're doing zero localization. Yeah, it's just all strictly, you know, we only work within the U.S.
Spanish is for the patient, the few things that are patient-facing.
Right. So I guess that's all the time we have. My timekeepers are telling me. But I am available. I have business cards up at the front if anybody wants to grab one, if you want to contact me later. There's my LinkedIn. You can contact me through LinkedIn as well. And I'm happy to have more conversations with anybody about this in the hallway all, you know, the rest of the day, today, tomorrow, whatever the case may be, feel free to grab me, ping me, whatever. Thank you very much for coming. I really appreciate all the great questions. Yeah. Thank you.